Highbridge Audio presents Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul, by Howard Schultz with Joanne Gordon, read by Stephen Bowlby. Introduction. This date is very special to me, I said to the baristas and their store manager, who were seated around me in a small restaurant. Exactly 28 years ago, on September 7th, 1982, I began working at the first Starbucks store, your store, here in the Pike Place Market. I reached into my pocket and pulled out a key. I still have mine to the front door. It was not something they expected Starbucks' chief executive officer to be carrying around, but I kept it on my keychain as a constant reminder of the responsibility I have to honor the heritage of the company and all the people who had come before me. Since it opened in 1971, the Pike Place store's front interior had remained unchanged, including the original logo. A few weeks earlier, the store's manager, Chad Moore, had emailed me to praise his team for achieving 8 straight weeks of record sales. Extremely impressed, I asked to take the entire team to dinner. So everyone could attend, baristas from other locations and several district managers offered to work at the Pike Place store while we celebrated. Now, on this warm Seattle evening, 27 of us had the restaurant to ourselves. Throughout the meal, I sat and visited with people at each table. The group ranged in age from 28 to 40, and the conversations were easy and lively. At one point, someone asked me to talk a bit about my own history. I could not help but smile. I grew up in the poor projects of Brooklyn, New York, paid my way through college, and moved to Seattle, Washington with my wife, Sherry, to take a job as head of marketing for a small coffee company called Starbucks. I spent my first weeks working at the Pike Place store, learning all about coffee, scooping fresh beans for customers and sealing them in small bags. But it was on a business trip to Italy that I unexpectedly discovered my true passion. As I visited small espresso bars throughout Milan and Verona, I was taken by the power that savoring a simple cup of coffee can have to connect people and create community among them. And from that moment on, I was determined to bring world-class coffee and the romance of Italian espresso bars to the United States. It was an experience I firmly believed could enrich people's lives, but many people did not believe in my vision. Back then, Starbucks stores did not sell beverages, only whole bean and ground coffee. So I left Starbucks and started my own coffee company, Il Giornale. We opened 2 espresso bars in Seattle and 1 in Vancouver, Canada. Then in 1987, I found myself in a position, but without enough money, to buy my former employer's 6 stores and roasting plant. With the support of a few investors, I merged the 2 companies and chose to keep the name Starbucks Coffee Company. By the end of that year, we had 11 stores, 100 employees, and a dream to create a national brand. In the fall of 2010, Starbucks had just posted its best financial performance in its almost 40-year history, despite critics' past predictions that our best days were behind us. Yet never has Starbucks' business been so healthy, primed to profitably grow not just by opening new stores around the world, but also through having deeper customer relationships, innovative offerings, and more places selling our products. Today, Starbucks has more than $10 billion in annual revenue and serves nearly 60 million visitors a week in 16,000 stores in 54 countries. More than 200,000 people, whom we call partners, represent Starbucks. While these numbers are one measure of our company's success, they are not what makes Starbucks truly successful, at least not by my definition. As a business leader, my quest has never been just about winning or making money. It has also been about building a great, enduring company, which has always meant trying to strike a balance between profit and social conscience. No business can do well for its shareholders without first doing well by the people its business touches. For us, That means doing our best to treat everyone with respect and dignity, from coffee farmers and baristas to customers and neighbors. I understand that striving to achieve profitability without sacrificing humanity sounds lofty, but I have always refused to abandon that purpose, even when Starbucks and I lost our way. The damage was slow and quiet, incremental, like a single loose thread that unravels a sweater inch by inch. Decision by decision, store by store, customer by customer, Starbucks was losing some of the signature traits it had been founded on. Worse, our company's self-induced problems were being compounded by external circumstances as the world went through unprecedented change on several fronts. Most significantly, the economy was hurtling toward a cataclysmic financial crisis that would destroy trillions of dollars in personal wealth, spur a credit crunch, a housing bust, and high unemployment, and eventually topple into a full-blown global recession. At the same time, a seismic shift in consumer behavior was underway, and people became not just more cost-conscious, but also more environmentally aware, health-minded, and ethically driven. Customers were holding the companies they did business with, including Starbucks, to higher standards. And then there was the digital revolution and the sea change in how information flows, the proliferation of online media and social networks, as well as the rise of the blogosphere. Too often, the real-time, worldwide exchange of opinions and news seemed to follow Starbucks' every move. Finally, an onslaught of new coffee and espresso competitors, from multinational corporations to independent coffee houses, swept into the marketplace and targeted Starbucks, often with unapologetic vitriol. These would be daunting challenges for any company, and when it comes to Starbucks, I take every threat very personally. Starbucks is in my blood. It is such a part of me that letting it unravel simply was not an option. Too many people had worked too hard to create a company that rewarded its employees and investors, and that, for years, had delivered a superior product and experience. As chairman, I held myself responsible for the problems we ourselves had created. And although I did not know exactly how to address the variety of external pressures bearing down on us, I knew that, without daily control of the business, I was essentially powerless to stop Starbucks from sinking. So in January 2008, I surprised many people by returning as CEO. Onward is the story of what happened next.